Welcome to FYI, the four-year innovation podcast. This show offers an intellectual discussion on technologically enabled disruption, because investing in innovation starts with understanding it. To learn more, visit arc-invest.com.
ARK Invest is a registered investment advisor focused on investing in disruptive innovation. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK or podcast guests and are not endorsements or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Clients of ARK Investment Management may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Hello, welcome to FYI, the For Your Innovation podcast. I'm Brett Winton, ARK Invest Chief Futurist. Today, we've got a great show for you. We are speaking with Peter Diamandis and Kathy Wood. Kathy, as you know, is our CEO and CIO, fearless leader. Peter is an author of a number of books. He founded the XPRIZES, and we talk with him about longevity, his new book on longevity, but also generally about biotech in market and how AI is accelerating everything. I hope you enjoy the conversation, and thanks for joining. Hello, welcome to FYI, the For Your Innovation podcast. I'm Brett Winton. Here we have Kathy Wood, our CEO, CIO, fearless leader, and Peter Diamandis. Peter, you have done so many things, it's hard to even intro you, but you know, you're a doctor, you created the XPRIZE Foundation, you co-founded Singularity University, you've written a number of books, one of which is about to come out, but including Abundance and others. You're a strong believer in exponential technology. You, I think, tried to start an asteroid mining company, and you're really into longevity. You've done a lot. First, tell us the title about the new book, and what do you want to talk about today?
Yeah, sure. So the title of the new book is called Longevity Guidebook, and the subtitle is How to Slow, Stop, and Reverse Aging and Not Die from Something Stupid. And it's, I think we're in the midst of a health span revolution. I think that when I was in medical school years ago, I remember seeing this television show about long-lived sea life, that certain species of whales could live hundreds of years. Greenland sharks live 500 years. I remember thinking to myself, if they can live that long, why can't we? And my answer was, it's either a hardware problem or a software problem. And we're going to have the solutions. And I think this decade, the decade ahead of us, due to AI and a whole set of biotech, from cellular medicines to single cell sequencing, CRISPR, all of these gene therapies, these are the tool sets that are going to enable us to really understand why we age, how to slow it, stop it, reverse it. And the book is a look at what you can do right now in sleep, diet, exercise, diagnostics, all those things, and where is the industry going? And my mission is to give people back control of their health, because it's the greatest gift. And we are living in a magical time in this regard.
Well, I mean, it seems like the first advice is don't die now, because things are probably going to get dramatically better in the near future, right?
I mean, yeah, and they are. I mean, you know, this is first and foremost a show about innovation in the financial markets. And we haven't seen the financial markets really agree with this. But let me set a sort of cornerstone here. You know, I'm in front of ultra high net worth individuals, family offices, venture funds all the time, giving keynotes. And I'll ask individuals the question of, you know, if you're 70 years old, you know, you've got hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank, and I can come to you and say, here's an extra 20 or 30 healthy years of life, how much is that worth to you? And when people are honest about it, it's worth almost all the capital they have. You know, the man or woman has their health has 1,000 dreams. The man or woman does not has but one. And so I think we're going to see a very fundamental longevity and health span industry materializing that extend our health. And this is going to be a whole set of diagnostic technologies, biotechnologies, and I think the market has massively underappreciated all of them.
So, you know, it's interesting. We shake our head every day when we watch the market basically declare all of these breakthroughs, research, discovery, cures for disease, basically they're declaring this bad business, bad for business or a bad business. And yeah. we know that's wrong. What you just said highlights that. And so when do we think we're going to see the turning point in this? You know, this kind of recognition that, you know, this is probably healthcare is probably the most profound application of AI and sequencing technologies and CRISPR gene editing. Profound, curing disease. When will the market wake up? What do you think?
You know, I've watched as the biotech stocks have all gone down the drain, literally circling the drain over the last 3 or 4 years. And the challenge is that the markets have changed how they value these companies, right? In the old days, it was valued by the, you know, the size, the potential market they would serve. And all these companies required huge amounts of capital to get to a product they could sell. And they went public early on, and the markets wanted to only value companies that had strong revenues and profits and predictability, and that was not the biotech companies. I think that that is going to change. I think where the new administration is going to change the regulatory structure, and so we're going to get a lot more permissive. I think we're going to see the M&A market increase, the IPO markets increase, that will fuel these biotech companies. But the other big idea is that it's going to get cheaper to build these products and services. A lot of, you know, AI is the big game changer. We're going to be able to model molecules and model cells and model, you know, instead of spending a decade or 2 decades in some case developing a product, that when you get to the market, finally, oh, just didn't quite work. We got a shell of our $3 billion investment. The market isn't like that, but we can model these things in AI in advance. And I think we're going to start to see these companies get valued properly.
Brett is usually the moderator of our podcasts. And yet there are two rabbit holes that that he has fallen down in the last 4 to 5 years. AI, he's deep into that rabbit hole, but also healthcare and the convergence among technologies. And what will people pay for a cure? How should cures be valued in the market? And we're going to be publishing a lot on this. So this is, Brett is going to be more than a moderator today. I think he and you are going to geek out a bit. So
bring it on. Bring it on.
Yeah, I'm the moderator.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no. So the AI and drug development impact, like you say, it's like accounting for cost of capital, maybe $2.4 billion to bring a drug to market. We think that it's actually pretty achievable to reduce that to $600 million. And instead of taking 13 years, you take 7 to 8 years to get to market with a drug.
I think that's the next step, but I think it's going to get faster, a lot faster. Right. We, you know, one of the things I write about in my early books is the 60s of exponential. When you digitize something, it starts deceptively slow. It dematerializes, demonetizes, democratizes, and then disrupts entire industries. And we're going to see AI doing that, right, with AlphaFold getting the Nobel Prize and AlphaFold 3 and AlphaProteo. You know, the old ways you'd go and discover new drugs is you'd put on your boots and your jackets, you'd go into the Amazon, you'd dig up dirt, hack down plants, you'd bring stuff back, you'd chop it up, you'd see if it was bioactive molecules, and you'd hope and pray. And it was, like you said, I mean, you know, what's the average time for drug development cost? You know, it's over a decade and over multiple billions. But today you can say, this molecule, if we can make this molecule, it will be the perfect drug for this disease or this person even. And we can design that molecule in AI and manufacture it. It's insane. We're about to see a revolution. DeepMind, you know, and Alphabet is one of those companies. There are others like InSilico Medicine. I think you might know InSilico, Kathy, which is pre-IPO as a company. There are a number of these companies that are drug discovery companies. And it's going to be, I mean, there's nothing more valuable than our health.
You know, in the public markets, there are also companies, Recursion, Absci, we've featured prominently. And, you know, they're doing amazing things and, you know, hitting milestones, I think, that are surprising to people, but you have to be paying attention to it and think it's important, you know, and with time that will come.
It will come with revenues and profits as well.
Right, right. I mean, ultimately, I think the challenge, particularly within this market environment, is like, if the market only wants cash flow, then no drug pipeline is going to look, you know, you get these milestone payments from other partners, but that's not really a validation of like commercialization and productization.
And used to be.
What's interesting.
Used to be, exactly.
But not in the way the market is working right now.
Right.
And so
right.
You can take comfort in that because it means it could change, right? Mm-hmm. But it does seem like this relative to asteroid mining is in a more easily capitalizable sector in that, like part of the reason I think health is really interesting is in a world of abundance, if AI and humanoid robots make everything inexpensive, then all the marginal dollars is going to be to living longer because you want to take advantage of all the wonderful things you have in abundance and live longer to take advantage of them.
Yeah. You know, people don't realize a few data points that I talk about in Longevity Guidebook. I think it's relevant here. First of all, we were never designed to live past age 30. You know, 100,000, 200,000 years ago on the savannas of Africa, you'd be in puberty at age 12 or 13. You were pregnant a year later. By the time you were 27, 28, you were a grandparent. And before McDonald's and Whole Foods was around and food was scarce, the last thing you wanted to do to perpetuate the species was take food from your grandchildren's mouth. So you would die. And so after age 27, 28, 29, 30, it's a slow downhill degrade. Our hormone levels begin to decrease. Our stem cell populations throughout our body decrease. Our muscle mass decreases. And it's a slow glide, if you would. And so that's important to realize that you can fight against that and there are technologies supporting it. The second thing to realize is, you know, that we are born with 3.2 billion letters from our mom and our dad, our genome. And we have the same genome when we're born, when we're 20, when we're 50, when we're 100 years old. And so why do we look different, you know, if we're running the same software? And it's not the genes you have. It's which genes are on and which genes are off, known as your epigenome, epi from the Greek word for above. And we're learning how to control that. And there are amazing companies out there, maybe some in your portfolio, that are doing epigenetic reprogramming. And that will be huge. Imagine being able to turn back the, you know, the hands of time. That's the vision. That's the goal.
Do you ascribe to the view that there's like one or two unlocks we need to call it stop the disease of aging? Or do you think it's like going to be an ongoing perpetual, like we just need to basically build out a lot of custom medication against a lot of biological fracturing that happens and we will extend both, you know, reduce morbidity and reduce mortality, kind of like moving forward stepwise.
Or Brett, also reprogram the genome, right? Edit the programming errors that age causes.
Yeah, and it does, right? We are constantly undergoing mutations from our environment, radiation, you know, all kinds of things. But Brett, I think we're going to find out. I mean, that's the most important thing. So we are a collection of 40 trillion human cells, another 100 trillion bacteria, virae, fungi in our bodies. We're a collective. And every one of those human cells is running about a billion chemical reactions per second. And to think that a human physician would be able to really understand at a root cause what's going on in your body just, you know, blows my mind. But AI can, and AI will. And so that's where AI is best, when it's able to consume huge amounts of data, identify patterns. And there is a reason why someone is 105 years old with a sharp mind and still going to the office every day, and why someone is 60 years old and, you know, and unable to get out of a chair. And the data is there, and we're going to be able to find it, analyze it, and understand it, and then create the appropriate, you know, therapeutics And I know a lot of therapeutics in the market or in development right now, and they blow my mind. I'm so excited about the decade ahead.
But Peter, I'm comparing myself to some of my friends. I just had a big reunion. And
those are dangerous to go to.
I was saying, okay, what's going on here? But you used a word I think very important. You fight. I mean, training is critically important. You know, I've learned so much from my trainer just about how you should walk. Don't let this implosion happen. You have to keep fighting for this. And
I'm so happy for you to bring this up, right? So there's a friend of mine, Dan Sullivan, who says, listen, your future needs to be bigger than your past.
Yes.
I love that. We're in the most extraordinary time ever in human history.
Yes.
You know, I have a slide that I love. It's a subtitle of my next abundance book. It goes, our ancestors would view us as gods. I mean, we're living in this extraordinary godlike experience with a small g of omniscience, omnipotence, omnipresence. And it's an amazing world, right? We're going to the stars. And so it's exciting. And I want to see as much of that as I can. And you're right. There are fundamental basics. And so I have a chapter in the book on sleep, on diet, on exercise, on mindset, and then a chapter on routines and on not dying of something stupid. We can talk about that because it's an important part of the equation.
And before you do that, you know, the do you said, now we all know we get a lot of people telling us what to do if we're interested in you know, staying young and healthy and everything. And I'm looking forward to reading your book. It comes out in early January, right?
Yep.
Away from the usual, the normal, we've heard it before, are you recommending in your book, or you believe people do not understand?
So important questions. I mean, listen, it really is the basics. I'm in the gym every morning, right? 5 days a week. If I can get six, I'll do six. Your muscles are your number one longevity organ in your body. And it's, I added 10 pounds of muscle mass last year, worked at it, did it, need to maintain it now, right? And I talk about what, you know, elements around exercise. Sleep is a fundamental. If we could have done with less sleep, we would have evolved it away. You know, you're non-productive, you're non-reproductive, you're open for predation during sleep. It would be the biggest waste of time. If we could have done away with it, we would have. Sleep is fundamental. I think people need to realize something which is unpopular when I say it, but sugar is a poison. Sugar molecules, glucose, and refined sugar. We now eat about 50 to 100 times more sugar than we ever have as we evolved in our diets, right? I just think there should be a black box warning on kids' cereals. And sugar in your bloodstream glycosylates proteins. It's inflammatory in the brain, inflammatory in your heart. At Fountain Life, we just did a study, which we just announced, and we looked at what are the things that correlate with heart disease? Is it your triglycerides, your LDL, your HDL, your Lp(a)? Everybody's heard these different terms. The number one correlated with heart disease was your hemoglobin A1C, which is your average blood glucose over the year. So the higher your blood glucose, the higher the probability of cardiac disease. And people just don't realize that. And we're addicted to it, and it's a challenge. You know, listen, I talk about in the book where we're going on stem cells and epigenetic reprogramming. There's a concept, Kathy, I'm curious, and Brett, if you've heard of it, called longevity escape velocity. Does that ring a bell?
I can guess what it means. It means that there's like a kind of like a division point in history where if you're on the right side of the line, then you basically live forever. But if you're on the wrong side of the line, it's actually the worst spot to be because you miss off.
Close. And here's the definition put by Aubrey de Grey and Ray Kurzweil. And it's that today, for every year that you're alive, science is extending your life by about a quarter of a year. And this comes from across a multitude of different things. I mean, the amount of science is amazing going on right now. You don't hear about it on the news, but it's extraordinary. You hear about it because you invest in it and you find it and you do the research and you back these incredible companies. There's going to be a moment in time where for every year that you're alive, science is extending your life for more than a year. And that's called longevity escape velocity. And I find that concept fascinating. When you ask people when we're going to reach longevity escape velocity, not just anybody, you know, Ray feels like we're going to get there by the end of the year 2030, like in 5 years. Crazy, right? Six years.
AGI, right? I mean,
right.
This is some correlation here.
It is. And because AI is going to be the driver to help us understand this, if you talk to George Church and David Sinclair at Harvard Medical School, they're a little more reserved. They think the mid-2030s, late-2030s. But here's the point. It's not 50 years from now. It's like the next 15 years. And what I tell people is your job is to not die from something stupid in the interim. you want to be in decent, good health to get to longevity escape velocity. And I call this a longevity mindset, right? It's like there's got to be a reason why you don't eat the chocolate cake in front of you or why you get out of a warm, cozy bed in the morning to go to the gym. And that reason is you want to not miss that, you know, that moment in time.
Yeah, the difference between going to the gym that morning and not could be living forever versus not. It could be an infinite life ahead of you that you're
infinite
foregoing.
Return on that investment.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, and if you think about kind of, my gosh, does retirement become a challenge if you have to design to a perpetual retirement?
Why would you ever want to retire? So let's talk about this, right? People retire for three reasons. One, they're forced to by laws and rules of their company. Second, they don't have the energy, or third, they're in pain. Mm-hmm. I really think those are the three reasons that people retire. But if you felt amazing, right, like Kathy, you and I do, and you're like the top of your game and you're more excited than ever before for what's coming, you'd never want to retire.
It is interesting. I think people who don't understand the amount of innovation that is taking place today, we talk about it all the time, Peter, the five platforms: robotics, energy storage, artificial intelligence, blockchain technology, and multi-omic sequencing. When they hear what you have said and they don't understand the explosion of innovation that is taking place, they think, oh my gosh, you know, these old people are just going to keep, you know, us from growing. And yet, if you have a growth mindset the way we do, we're trying to figure out, okay, there is such an explosion taking place. We cannot even imagine the kinds of jobs, which might be even more interesting. Another reason people retire is they just hate their jobs.
Well, that's
right?
True.
Right.
But now, what if living is demonetized and AI can help you learn whatever you want and create your dream job, and you're no longer working because you have to, because you're working because you want to? That's a beautiful life.
Right.
You know, I've had this argument with Elon, who has said people need, you know, I've had this debate about longevity with him, and he's like, no, people should die. And I'm going, okay, you're going to feel different. You're going to feel different in about 10 years or so. And it's like, people need to die to make room for other people. I said, listen, you know, the CEO of
Elon,
Lockheed,
of all people.
I know that. I said, the CEO of Lockheed and Boeing didn't have to die for Starship to materialize and for SpaceX or... You know, it's like better products will displace anybody at any age anyway.
And creativity. We can only imagine what's going to happen. Elon, I think, will rethink what he said to you.
He will.
My prediction.
He will. Yeah. And I tease him about eating donuts in the morning. So he said, I'm still eating my donuts. And I said, you won't. You'll stop.
No, we have to have some population to populate Mars with. So I think he'll come around.
Yep.
Yeah.
There is, like, you know, at first it does seem like on the research side, longevity is capitalizable in part because really rich people absolutely want to live longer. You know, you can't spend all of your resources at once. And so you're happy to invest in things that could both benefit humanity and benefit, you know, you, the individual who would otherwise expire. But it does seem like the way in which the healthcare system thinks about aging, like, does the healthcare system have to treat aging itself as a disease for these treatments to be correctly studied and monetized?
If you want your research and your treatments to be government funded, yes. So I'll tell you what I did recently. So you are both familiar with the XPRIZE Foundation. This is our 30th year. We've launched 30 XPRIZE. Thank you. Hard to believe. We launched 30 XPRIZEs over 30 years. We've launched about $600 million of in these incentive prizes that have driven close to $10 billion in R&D. So very proud of that. And a year ago, I raised $141 million and launched our HealthSpan XPRIZE. And so these are your future companies you're going to be investing in. So this is the challenge. We ask teams to develop a therapeutic that within 1 year of time, if given to you, will reverse the ravages of aging for your cognition, immune, and muscle by a minimum of 10 years, a goal of 20 years. So that after a year of therapeutic, in the 20-year case, you've got the memory span of memory, your ability to mount immune reactions, the ability to build muscle you had when you were 20 years younger. And we have over 500 teams competing for this from around the world. An amazing panoply of technologies. Anyway, it's extraordinary, and I'm excited. It'll be one in the next 6 years by 2030. And we're funded, you know, Chip Wilson, the founder of Lululemon, has put up $36 million. He was my first donor. I was on the phone with him, pitching him on putting the full $100 million in. And he goes, "Peter, how much is the prize that Elon funded?" I said, "Oh, it's a $100 million, carbon sequestration prize." He goes, "Can we make ours bigger?" I said, "What do you have in mind?" He says, $101 million. I said, "Okay, you put the extra million in," and he did. He did, and the rest came from Hevolution in Saudi, and then a number of individual investors, including myself. Yeah.
Do you think that, so on the back end, does it have to be, like you say, government funded? Like, you could imagine the current health insurance system as it exists might have a hard time helping people to live forever.
You could flip the model. I think the insurance industry is perverse. You pay for fire insurance and you get paid after your building burns down. You pay for life insurance and your next of kin get it. What I want to see is the model where when I buy fire insurance, it prevents my place from burning down, and life insurance keeps me alive longer. Health insurance prevents me from getting sick. Those are the companies I think we should be creating and funding.
So one of the hypotheses, and maybe you'll talk more about this, Brett, is that as we move away from sick care to health care, you know, most of the budget, health care budget, nearly 20% of GDP, in the U.S. is for sick care.
Yes.
And only 15% for therapies. Could it be that we're moving longer term, maybe faster than most people think, in your words, Peter, to shift that? Really, it's got to be more than 15% of GDP. Let's just say roughly 15% of GDP towards health care, which includes cures, which the market is really grappling with. Even though the cures are here with CRISPR therapeutics, and we've talked about this before, market can't value it. They need to see the whites of the eyes of, the revenues and cash flow. I know I mixed metaphors.
Yeah, metaphors, but that's fine. But you're right. They have a hard time projecting this. And, they'll come in after the early adopters, early investors have made the first major returns.
There's an analogy to Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin has been leading here. And I remember—
Can we celebrate $100,000, please?
Hallelujah, yeah. But I remember, Peter, we talked about this, 2015, we took our first position when it was only $250. And, people were making fun of us saying, that's just a marketing gimmick, And they still say that about some of our projections, which are based on, deep, deep research. They will take a projection and just say, marketing gimmick. I kind of like it when that happens.
Well, it gives us more time.
Not only that, it means nobody understands. So this process of discovery is going to become quite exciting. And I think we're going to see this in all kinds of innovation, but the most surprising is probably going to be in the healthcare space.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we're going to see a revolution. that will be a sweeping revolution. The existing healthcare, as you said, sick care industry will get destroyed and crushed. You know, you should be buying puts on current healthcare system. If you look, there's a great chart, you can Google it, and it looks at the number of physicians and the number of healthcare administrators. Healthcare administrators are growing exponentially, and the physicians are this flat line.
Yeah.
And it's sad. Now, there was a paper released about a week or 10 days ago in which it looked at the accuracy of diagnostics with a doctor alone, a doctor plus a chatbot, and an AI by itself. And I don't know if you, did you see the paper? I don't know if you guys,
Yes. Yeah.
Remember Brett, what
the chatbot won.
Yeah. Right? The AI by itself won.
In other words,
so a doctor by themselves, let's call, I don't remember the exact numbers, that's 75% correct. The doctor with the AI assistant can do like 80, 85%, but the AI by itself is doing like 90%. And you ask yourself, why is that? Well, we have all these biases. And we're injecting noise. We're injecting the wrong answers into the system because we believe it, whether the data shows it or not.
Absolutely.
That's fascinating. Yeah. So, you know, one of the chapters in the book, Kathy is, and Brett, is the chapter on not dying for something stupid. And I think it's important for folks to hear this. Our bodies are incredibly good at hiding disease. If I were to ask you right now, do you know what's going on inside your body? You know, the majority of people truly have no idea. I feel good. Great. Fantastic. You feel good. But our bodies can hide disease until it can't. So here are the numbers. 70% of people who have a heart attack had no shortness of breath, no pain, even nothing on a calcium score, because it's soft plaque that in the middle of the night can break off. And it's not calcified. It's soft plaque and block a coronary artery. You don't feel a cancer until stage three or stage four, at which point, you know, a lot of times it's too late. You know, we know people have gone to the hospital.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is, especially with cancer?
Because our body is an incredible machine that compensates constantly for any failure. So Parkinson's patients, you don't have a Parkinsonian tremor until over 70% of the substantia nigra neurons are gone. The body compensates. The body, it's plastic. And so it takes us to the breaking point and then you break. And so one of the things, you know, I've said very publicly is you can know what's going on inside your body and you should know. And you know, I built with Tony Robbins, Mark Benioff, an early investor, and Bill Kapp, we built a company called Fountain Life. And we have centers. We have four centers today. We announced our next four and then a roadmap for 25. And they're diagnostic and therapeutic centers. And you come in, we upload you. We collect 200 gigabytes of data and can tell you not only is there anything going on in your body, which is critically important, but what's likely to happen to you and how do you prevent it, right? And people say, I don't want to know. And I'm like, bullshit, you want to know. You're going to find out eventually. Do you want to find out now we can do something about it or when it's too late?
But often doctors will say they don't want to know. Right? Like a doctor would dissuade you from doing it because they'll be
That's, we have a lot of our, a lot of our Fountain Life members who like, my doctor told me not to come. And then we discover, you know, we've discovered hundreds of cancers, hundreds of brain aneurysms, lots of heart disease in people who think they're absolutely perfect health.
So were you surprised by anything, not to get into anything specifically, but were you surprised?
Yeah, so I am one of the most well-studied human beings out there because I, you know, I'm the chairman of the company. And so I go through this, you know, I've been going through this for 8 years and I am constantly doing all my bloods and my checkups every quarter. I take like 75, 80 pills and I update them based upon what the blood result. Yeah, I know. It's a lot of pills.
My mom
says, what are you doing, Peter? I said, Mom, listen, I have a rational reason for everything I take.
Wait. So you have to get up early in the morning to go to the gym, but before going to the gym, you have to ingest 80 pills, which is
no.
45 minutes.
You have to do with food, Brad. Oh, that would be horrible. Oh.
You know, it's a routine. It's not for everybody. And I built it based upon the testing I've done, the knowledge I've done. Long story short, there are basic things that people should do. If you want to have a longevity mindset and keep yourself in the best shape you can to intercept the breakthroughs that are coming, it's that simple. And, you know, was I surprised by anything? My hemoglobin A1C was higher than I wanted. And so I have a couple medications because I don't eat sugar. I'm pretty strict about, and I'll have some dark chocolate. I have eliminated alcohol. I'll have like a quarter of a glass of red wine toasting with friends and so forth. But my hemoglobin A1C, I think it comes from the fact that I'm up from 5:30 till 9:30, you know, every day, and I'm just acting,
taking all those pills.
Two 13-year-olds and five companies I'm running, and I'm just basically my cortisol levels are high, so it's probably those stress levels. And there is a whole new field of medicine called functional medicine, which we built Fountain Life on, which is understanding at a molecular level what's going on. Because the old medicine, when I was in medical school years ago, treats it like, you know, this is the heart, this is the liver, this is the kidney. No, you're a single organism, these 40 trillion cells. I'm curious, I think about the longevity industry as one that ultimately will be super well capitalized and is going to be one of the most important ones. You know, it's also, you know, you've done some incredible work at ARK Invest on the projected impact of autonomous cars, of cybercab, of humanoid robotics. I love your research, and I commend it to everybody. It's super deep and super well, it's beautifully presented. There is a body of work that addresses when we extend the health span of the average population by a year or 10 years or 20 years, massive transformation in global GDP.
Because of the labor productivity side.
Labor productivity reduced. Yeah. So reduced cost on reduced loss of work, increased productive time, not money wasted on pharma. Yeah.
Brett is our chief futurist. If I guess you would have introduced yourself in the.
Well, I know Brett is that from many conversations. Brett,
so he actually, and I love this stuff because economics is where I started, has given us a sense of how quickly real GDP growth is going to accelerate. Now, I don't think, and it's because of these technologies, the five platforms I mentioned, which involve 14 different technologies. Of course, productivity is critical. But Brett, I don't think we have done the analysis or appended it to this idea that, you know, human life will extend and productive years will extend.
Well, that's the key, because it's kind of like, it's always, from an insurer's perspective, it's always cheaper to let the patient die, right? Extending life is like, actually, you know, it's not very efficient.
In this new world, that is
But that's what I'm saying. If you extend human life without increasing human health, that's actually a very GDP destructive act.
Brett, you're absolutely right. Let's define health span and lifespan. Lifespan is how long your heart's ticking, and health span is how long do you have the vitality, the energy, the ability to move around and enjoy life, right? Yeah. You know, Kathy, you would appreciate this. I was at the Vatican, and I was on stage running a panel on the morality of immortality was the name of the panel. And I flipped it to the immorality of mortality. It was a fun conversation. And on the panel I had with me, a rabbi, an elderman, a cardinal, and another religious faith. It sounds like a joke. You're walking into a bar, and we're talking about this. And the rabbi gave this extraordinary biblical recitation of the history of projected human lifespan. And talked about Methuselah and the early Bible having lifespans of 800-900 years, and then humanity sinned, and the Bible said, "Thou shalt only have 120 years." And it was interesting because, you know, the eldest human today is, you know, recorded is like 122 years old. And I think the oldest person on the planet today is probably in one teens, right? And I remember saying to the group there, listen, I'm happy to accept the 120 for the moment. I'll renegotiate when I get there. but I asked the question, this is a room full of religious scholars and physicians and researchers. And I asked, hey, how many folks here want to live to 150 years old? Expecting everyone's hand to pop up. And it was like crickets. It was like 20% of the room comes up. And the realization is that people's vision of what that looks like is you're decrepit and slobbering in a wheelchair.
Well, there are two, though. That's one. The other is if they believe in an afterlife, which is perfect and
but
joyous.
The afterlife's infinite. You know, you can have the infinity
later. But I'm just saying you crickets may have been more associated with that than thinking about, you know, 150 years old and, you know, decrepit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that might have been, it was the sample, You might have had wrong samples.
But I think the physicians were also, and the researchers also didn't raise their hands. And it's, you know, it's interesting, right? All of us here today, everybody listening, has a number in your head. You have a number of how long you think you'll live. Whether you like it or not, it's back there someplace. It comes from a conversation with your mom or dad or grandparent. Or
it extends as you age a little bit, right?
It might well. But the point is that your mindset matters so much in this game of longevity. Mindset, you know, I want to read a quick quote to you that is from the book, and it's from the National Academy of Sciences. And it's pretty, for me, it's like super important for people to hear this, because it definitely maps onto your mindset at ARK Invest. So it says, in a study of 69,744 women and 1,429 men, it's one of the only studies with like more women than men, most of them always the other way around, published in the prestigious journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, it was found that optimistic people live as much as 15% longer than pessimists.
Yeah. Optimists win in the long term, for sure.
Over and over again, double dividends. Yeah.
You know, what's interesting about that one, when I started ARK, and I was with a friend who's not in the business, and I was trying to explain to him why I wanted to start ARK. He said, oh, so this is all about the new creation, innovation, the new creation, procreation, creation. We are here to create. And I thought, wow, what an interesting way to think about this.
Yeah.
Because it's true. It's mindset. How optimistic are we about these technologies, how they're going to transform the world, make
uplift,
it a better place.
Uplift humanity, right?
Yes, yes.
Do you think that of all the technologies we look at, it is so obviously clear, at least to me, that in biology space, we are way, way earlier than in the other spaces. Where like we,
sure.
every single like piece we're peeling off the onion, it's like, it seems like there's like a million layers beneath it. Do you think that an acceleration in AI, which, you know, conceptually, a lot of what makes me could be uploaded. Maybe I'm not uploading my brain, but it really like kind of the pattern of my thinking and stuff could be captured by these systems. And I could live on in that way without necessarily living on biologically.
Let's split that into two parts. The first is that AI will be able to understand at a cellular level all of the reactions going on inside a cell. You could build a computer model of a cell, and not just any cell, a Brett cell, right? So your cell. And I then know this drug molecule works specifically for you. So that's really important. We're going to start to see, and this is where OpenAI will go next, right? They just got the Nobel Prize. Congratulations to the team there, to John Jumper and to Demis for AlphaFold.
Yes.
But where they'll go next is they'll build AI models of cells and then tissues and then organs to know what drug will work for you. Another big discovery in 2024, I'm putting out my top 10 2024 breakthroughs, and then my top 10 predictions for 2025 on my podcast and on my blog. And one of the ones breakthroughs of this year was the mapping of a Drosophila's brain. So using AI, they were able to basically map every neuron and every synaptic connection of a Drosophila. It's like 50 million neurons. No, sorry, 150,000 neurons and like 50 million synaptic connections. And they put it into a computer model. And then the amazing thing was they said, okay, the computer model, if we poke it or we give it a sugar drop, what does it do? And then in real life, it does the same thing. So you've actually uploaded it. So I'm going to have at the Abundance, you know, you're going to be, Kathy, with me at the Abundance 360 Summit in March in Los Angeles.
Looking forward to it, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. We'll go deep into humanoid robots and AI and all of this. Well, one of the companies that is going to be there, incredible entrepreneur in this brain mapping and uploading space, has the technology he believes, and it's we have a whole day on moonshots, and his moonshot is being able to upload your brain, Brett, for $50 million, being able to do a brain upload, map the 100 billion neurons and 100 trillion synaptic connections in the human brain. Pretty insane stuff, right?
I mean, it seems like kind of, I mean, yes, there's me and there's my own consciousness, but the real, like the reason you write maybe, I don't know, I asked you that question before we started recording, yeah. But the reason people write or the reason kind of, I share kind of like the technology forecast that we do is to basically propagate my ideas through the universe,
sure,
in some way.
Sure.
And like, I am the sum of all of the things I've impacted. And so you can imagine that even before we can upload an entire brain, you know, there's a certain amount of me that is encoded by AI systems based on all the recorded information on me and everything I've written. And that's just going to increase and increase and increase. And I think about my dad who died, and it's like, I wish he were alive later.
100%.
So I could more like, I could still connect with him, not with him, but with parts of him in a way that I can't now.
I love that. Let me use this moment for everybody listening. If you've got an elder mom or dad who's still with you, take your iPhone and sit them down for 3 hours and record them. Record their voice, record their image, record their story. Do yourself that gift, because in the next year or 2 years, you'll be able to, if they pass, you'll be able to upload that into an AI model and have your great-grandkids be able to have a conversation with them. Don't miss that opportunity. I did that with my mom. I missed that with my dad. And I went looking for any videos I could to get his voice, to get his persona. You know, I built in a Peterbot. I've got Joshua Hsu, the CEO of HeyGen, that does all the amazing. He's coming to speak at the Abundance Summit. And everybody now can create their own, you know, really high fidelity voice and video avatar that can join a Zoom call for you if you want on your behalf.
You know,
it's coming.
One of the questions, and we debate this at our brainstorms, I'll throw out Roxanne Guggen's name here for that. And, you know, she has said time and again, you know, we are hardwired 3 billion years. There's no way we're going to be able to replicate, you know, Brett, right? Because of that. Or you, Peter. What do you think of that?
I think that's false. I'll tell you why. We talked about the AI physician, diagnostician being better than the doctor on its own. I used to think that the last bastion of humanity that would not be replaced by AI was empathy.
Uh-huh.
And the ability to connect. And there was a study done last year. I think it was reported in JAMA, Journal of American Medical Association, that patients found AI therapists far more empathic and appreciated over human therapists. And if you stop and think about why, well, first of all, they're infinitely patient. They don't cut you off after the 45-minute period is over. And they don't judge you. You don't feel judged by an AI.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, we're going to start to see, I mean, when I have my Optimus 3 in my home, or my Figure 3, whichever one, whether Brett or Elon, tell me one first, and they have a personality, they're going to become part of the household. I really do think so.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, you saw the human optimist catching that ball. I mean,
yeah,
you know, that was just so interesting. Even though there was a teleoperator, it brought to life. Wait, this is happening much faster.
You were at the Robo event, weren't you? I think I saw some video. I was running an event. I was on stage those days. I was so wanted to be there. It was fun, huh?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Watching all of that come to life. And, you know, I think as with all of us, when you're setting up for an event, you end up either thinking about things or doing things maybe faster because, first of all, it is possible. You just have to press forward. And I think that's something that happened because of that event.
I think a useful way to think about all of these technologies that we're building in some ways, but particularly AI, is as compression and decompression technology that's very, very getting more powerful every year. And like the reason we write, it's basically like to decompress this, that it's really to like solidify a thought pattern in our brain and put it out into the universe.
Sure.
And kind of, so will it ever, you know, will there ever be an identical Brett? No, but there will be good decompressions of things that I've said and even like compressions of my thoughts and kind of the new Turing test maybe is not talking to a stranger and what saying whether or not it's a robot. It's talking to an AI loved one and saying whether or not it's really that loved one or the facsimile of that loved one.
Yeah. And I agree. You know, it's interesting. I told you I built a Peter bot that I uploaded all my blogs, all my books into and created a image and voice and so forth. And I did a podcast with myself and I was jealous. It was much more eloquent. It had a far better vast knowledge of everything I've done. And it was like, wow, you're really good. I'm jealous.
Good. Okay, fine. Yes, I know why and how that would happen. But I am beginning to get reports now that are clearly written by AI.
Yes, I get that. Totally.
It is so obvious. And so
it's like butter spread on a piece of toast.
Exactly. So I think that is also, I think we're going to have a certain discernment here and maybe it will disappear over time. I don't know.
Well, you know? Guess what? We're going to find out. I mean, this is what I keep on saying, everybody. We're living during the most extraordinary time ever. And whatever questions you have, it's like, just hang around. We're going to find out in the next few years across all of these things.
Yes. And like back to the beginning of the conversation, the main message here is don't die.
Yes, don't die. wear your seatbelt. Don't text while driving.
right. Or get in a cyber cab if you need to text.
You know, another thing interesting that we have just all lived through was the announcement with Willow, you know, Hartmut Nevin at Google, the notion that he's shown for the first time that increasing the number of qubits has actually reduced the error rate in these quantum machines. And then Kathy and Brett, you must know Jack Hittery and Sandbox AQ,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And the work that they're doing, I'll have the head of Sandbox AQ's AI simulations on stage. Just the stuff they're doing in material science and yes. Biology. Crazy. I mean,
but since we're on this, people who are listening probably are very interested in innovation. I know Brett has been our resident. I've been saying, okay, here's another breakthrough. How close are we? And Brett and I have worked together for 17 years. So
wow.
For the 17 years, it's been another 20 years or something. But something has changed. Something has changed, but it's still quite a far out. Am I reading you correctly? Oh,
in terms of quantum
commercial
quantum computing. Yeah.
And so there are two parts.
Yeah.
So let me hit two things there. And Brett, I'd love your thoughts. First of all, I have zero worries about Bitcoin, period. Let me just be clear about that. Anytime in the near term, if you're concerned about quantum hacking Bitcoin, you should be much more concerned about quantum hacking the entire financial industry, right. You know, and the nuclear codes. I mean, Bitcoin is the last thing to worry about hacking. If you're worried about that, please redirect your worries to something actually relevant. And then what Sandbox AQ has done is using the equations of quantum physics, Schrödinger's equation, Heisenberg's uncertainty principles, and so forth, to create what they call these quantum models, so that they use classical computation and AI to model things on an atomic and molecular level. And they're getting incredible results.
Yeah. And I think actually there's this interesting dynamic, I think, that happens in technology sometimes, which could happen, call it prospectively, with quantum computing versus like the AI breakthrough we've had, you know, here, where kind of the acceleration and kind of deep learning, basically like transformers and diffusion models, provides some of the information that you would otherwise have needed a quantum computer to get. It doesn't provide molecular level simulations, but it provides you with good enough for the purposes of the drug design that you need to do with the likes of AlphaFold. And so then kind of if it comes back to like, well, how do we capitalize these technologies? Like quantum computing needs billions of dollars sunk over, you know, probably tens of billions of dollars sunk over a decade plus to hit like commercial applications that are really meaty. Well, like, is even Alphabet going to have the patience, and maybe Alphabet does, but, you know, are investors going to have the patience to fund those efforts when you can get a lot of the juice that's in that lemon just squeezing with AI sure. along the way?
Yeah. I agree with you, but thank God Alphabet has had large enough profit margins to make these investments. All right. So, you know, I've known Larry and Sergey and Eric from the earliest days at Google, and, you know, good on them for investing in so many different amazing areas through Google X, now X at Alphabet. I think they've had a massively positive impact on the planet.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question, and including like literally being able to tell what's going on the planet, like open sourcing a best in the world weather model, because they created it there and they're not going to directly monetize it. It's amazing.
I think that I want folks to understand first and foremost, listen, the biotech markets are going to be renewed. We're going to see in this administration with reduced regulatory strictness, I think. We have so many people go offshore to go and do stem cells or peptides or things. It's sad. You know, there needs to be a mechanism by which the best science and best scientists make it available to Americans here in America. And I think under RFK, we're going to see that, and I'm excited about that. So we're going to see, I think, a real upward momentum in the biotech stocks that have been flushed down the toilet, bluntly, over the last few years. The second thing is people have a huge amount of control over their health if they want it. And, you know, the reason I wrote this book, I don't need money from another book. In fact, I'm giving all profits from the book to the XPRIZE Foundation as a donation. And then you can buy the book on Amazon. I think it's like $27, or you can get it for less than half the price on the website. If you go to longevityguidebook.com, my goal is to impact 1 million people, to teach them the control they have on their health, and just, you know, it's written in a way that you can like read 3 pages and learn something and do that. It's like creating, you know, small steps that each one of them can support you in your sleep, in your diet, in your exercise, in your mindset, in your routines. And they all compound on each other.
Yeah, it's been fascinating watching you evolve as innovation has begun to take root, but these platforms that around which we've centered our research and around which we center our conversations with you, you know, they've barely begun. And I think that's what you do, Peter. You inspire people to go out and, you know, and harness this excitement and, you know, want to live for the next 50, 100, or 800 years.
Yeah. You know, and there's a beautiful alignment between Bitcoin and longevity, isn't there?
Yes.
Yes.
For sure.
You need it. I mean, if you're living hundreds of years, you don't want to have to hop around from fiat currency to fiat currency as there's like, you know.
And have it vaporized by the government, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you much, Peter. Really fascinating conversation. And look forward to reading the book. It comes out in January, but I assume you can pre-order today?
Yes, you can pre-order it, again, at Longevity Guidebook, and you get it at half the price. And there's a whole bunch of bonuses that are available. Again, my goal is make this accessible, easily usable by as many folks as possible. And Kathy, excited to see you in March at the Abundance
Likewise.
Summit at the Terranea. It's going to be awesome.
I'm excited. I'm excited, Peter, and look forward to being on stage with you again.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Great. Thanks all.
ARC believes that the information presented is accurate and was obtained from sources that ARC believes to be reliable. However, ARC does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information, and such information may be subject to change without notice from ARC. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this podcast may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARC's current views and assumptions, and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements.